Welcome to the Fit for Privacy podcast with Punit Bhatia. This is the podcast for those who care about their privacy. Here, your host, Punit Bhatia, has conversations with industry leaders about their perspectives, ideas, and opinions relating to privacy, data protection, and related matters. Be aware that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are not legal advice. Let us get started.
We all have a keen interest in how the US privacy landscape will evolve. And there has been some activity, and it seems we are on a verge of having a federal privacy law. Will it happen? Will it not? We don't know. But we can talk about what's happening, and we can talk about how it will change things and what will change and how is it different from the EU GDPR. And we talk about it with none other than Brendan Poo, who is a legal professional and is active in understanding all these developments. So let's go and talk to Brendan. So welcome, Brendan. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me today. It's I've listened to a few of your shows, so it's neat to be on, especially to talk about privacy.
That's wonderful. So let's maybe start talking about privacy, and let me ask you, when you think of the GDPR, what's the one word that comes to your mind?
Sure. So I think GDPR is progressive because, like, you know, us in America, there's definitely some critique of the GDPR and how perhaps we could do things slightly differently here. But at the end of the day, like, it was a groundbreaking law, in my opinion. Like, yes, I don't want to say that it's not perfect. And I think a lot of those in European Union would agree there could be even changes. But in terms of the rights that consumers are given, it's pretty progressive.
Indeed, it certainly is progressive, and I think you say it right. No law or nothing is perfect. It's always evolving and it's always progressing. So that's how it is. And then if we talk about your personal situation, how did you come into privacy? What's your story? I mean, when, how did it happen?
Sure. Yeah. So privacy and even cyber more broadly are my passions. So currently I'm with a think tank in Washington, D.C. It's called the Arshery Institute. So it's a center-right think tank, but it is nonpartisan and they're solutions oriented. So I'm on their cyber and national security team there, but specifically I lead their data security and data privacy work. So that's where I am currently. But immediately before this, I was the legislative counsel. So as an attorney, for the New Jersey legislature, so one of our state legislatures, and I handled a wide range of laws in that position, but I would specifically pull out anything to do with privacy, cyber, or tech. So that required following the entire landscape around the country in terms of what other states were doing and perhaps how we could implement them at a state level. So the strong privacy portfolio there. And then, you know, I had a few positions before that, and each one had either an element of privacy, cyber, or both. I was at the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, as a fellow. I also led a national publication, professional journal, and I served an elected and appointed office at the local, county, and state level. And in those capacities, I always tried to push cyber and privacy because that was just my personal passion.
Wow, that's wonderful. And with so much of broad experience, how do you see the privacy tech or cyberspace landscape, especially the legislative landscape in the United States? Because we do hear different opinions. On one hand, we say we have, say, sector-based laws. On other hand, the critics say there's no overarching law, but then each of the states is coming up. How do you see this landscape?
So I would answer two different ways, where we are and where we could go. So you're right. Right now, it is either sector-specific. So different federal agencies have rules around privacy, and they only impact certain sectors. So if you're in healthcare and finance, you have rules. Or you could live in one of the five states of our 50 that have privacy frameworks. And we've seen even that number go up significantly. Obviously, most people are familiar with California and their privacy framework, but more states have come online. And truthfully, I think that's the trend. There's a lot of states that have the groundwork formed, even my home state of New Jersey. We don't have a privacy law, but there's been significant work to accomplish that in terms of research and hearings. But then in a broader level, It's perfect timing because there has been significant movement on data privacy and security legislation in Washington, D.C. For years, there's been efforts at reaching compromise, and we can kind of go into why they haven't passed and where the roadblocks have been. But for the first time, we've seen bipartisan and bicameral legislation, and it passed our House committee. So now it's at the stage where it could go either to the full House for a vote, and hopefully perhaps there'd be some Senate action as well. And that's the acronym for that is ADPPA, or the American Data Privacy and Protection Act. So that's our major comprehensive piece of legislation moving now. And that would be similar to GDPR in many respects, but there are key differences as well. But that would be a national law that would apply to every state. And one question that's up for the air is, or in the air rather, could states still have their own privacy frameworks? And I know that's a huge point of contention right now among California. And politically speaking, there's a lot of ramifications as well.
Yeah. So you expect or you foresee that legislation at a federal level getting through pretty soon or in foreseeable future?
Well, we're very optimistic at our street. Like we strongly believe there needs to be privacy legislation. Really for three reasons, both consumers in terms of them having rights, for business, because now there is this patchwork that's emerging and it's only going to continue. And then near and dear to our heart is the national security aspects of it. But at the same time, we realize there is a long road ahead. It still has to be heard in the House, and there's many people that are pushing back against it. And right now, there's four key players that ideally would endorse this bill, or members of Congress, I should say, the chair of both committees, as well as the ranking members of both committees on the Senate and House side. Right now, the Senate chair is not endorsing this piece of legislation. Senator Cantwell believes it's lacking in certain respects around enforcement, as well as just several other provisions of the bill. So without her support, it is a challenge. But I know the other three members are aggressively trying to solve deficiencies in this bill, both inside the Congress, as well as just listening to stakeholders. Like I know we've been engaging pretty heavily, industry groups, as well as advocacy groups. They've been weighing in to try to make this piece better. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but it the other factor for those that are not in the United States to consider, this is an election year, and the Congress ends in just a few short months. So there's also the timing piece. So that's a challenge, and Congress is going to go on recess in just a matter of days. So is it possible, and would we like to see it? Yes. If for some reason it doesn't pass, I think we've laid an incredible framework for a future Congress, and we've made significant strides in areas where we've traditionally not been able to do.
That's good. But if there is activity, if there is conversation around the law, I think it's a matter of time it will come. And if political will is there, it will certainly come.
I completely agree with you. And I think a big takeaway is this bill, like all laws, there has to be compromise. If I were to sit down with you and write an ideal law, it would perhaps look different than the current ADPPA. But there's never going to be a law everybody's happy with. To your point with the GDPR earlier, there has to be give and take. Like the big piece up in the air now is preemption. I kind of alluded to that earlier, which is essentially just the complicated legal term for how does the federal law interact with states? There's not agreement on that currently. And that's an area where I think there would need to be compromise for this law to move forward.
Certainly. And I think sometimes I wonder, why can't they take anything like GDPR or the OECD principles, save as, and convert it into a local law or a regional law or a country law? But we know how politics is all about, or jurisdictions are all about. In the legislative scope, everyone wants to have it in their own way. And that's where we create differences and it becomes challenging. But you also mentioned that it's slightly different from the EU structure. Are you having a view on what are the things that are different, or it's too early to say that?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely... I'm an avid reader of GDPR, but I've not been a practitioner, so you can correct me where I'm wrong on GDPR. But it's been an ongoing debate. I think I first heard it raised maybe once GDPR passed. There was a lot of news reporting was, could the United States just take the GDPR and implement it? That would have solved a lot of issues. It wouldn't have to be back and forth. And the challenge was kind of the politics in the U.S. There's a lot of people that, especially from an industry point of view, that would not be fully sold on GDPR. PR in the US. And there are certain respects of our legislation that go further than GDPR. I think just something to flag, like even we don't see this in state laws. There's significant civil rights protections in this law, which deal with discriminatory uses of data around just certain classes, whether it be race or sexual orientation. So that's pretty novel. But there are some shared characteristics too, like the rights for consumers. You do see a lot of overlap there. Like there's not a uniform right to access or delete information in the US unless you happen to live in one of those select states. So to a certain point, there are borrowed concepts, even if people don't admit they may have come from the GDPR. That's just my personal perspective, though.
Yeah, I mean, at a broad level, when we look at it, any law that has, it'll have a definition of personal data and sensitive data, some sort of it. You can call sensitive data as PHI, PII, PSI, whatever. Then you will have some rights, and you can't award or provide rights any different than what the GDPR has provided. You can have maybe one called differently or two called differently. You would have some mechanism for consent or processing, and there come the legitimate basis. And then you'll have breach notification and some sort of risk assessment, call it DPIA, PIA, whatever. And then you will appoint a person, call it grievance officer, data protection officer, privacy officer, or sometimes the sponsor or whatever we call it. So essentially, these are the elements you will always have. You cannot change that at that abstract level. Of course, I'm talking about an abstract level. We can put it in one page, but the law is usually hundreds of pages, and that's where the differences come and the devil is in the detail. But I do agree with you that essentially there are similarities, and there will always be similarities with the GDPR or any other law for that matter. We always compare with the GDPR usually. And then we are also seeing in the legislative landscape a lot of talk about AI, robotics, new tech, or sometimes we say big tech, and it'll be all chips. We will be using beacons, we will be using this human, inserted chips or biochips. Nobody knows what is possible, but we all know a lot is possible than what we see now, what we are aware of it. And then we are putting in laws based on what has happened in last 10, 20 years. So how is the US looking to, let's say, regulate? I know that's not the right word in the US, because we believe that, or you believe that it's a free economy, we should let innovation flourish. And I do believe it, but all the same, you need to ensure human values or the rights are preserved. So how is the US looking at that challenge?
Yeah, so I've seen a couple ways. Surprisingly, states are doing a lot in the tech space. Like even before I left New Jersey, I was surprised in the type of legislation that was coming out of emerging tech, whether it be around algorithms or just the use of biometric information around surveillance, around just novel technology that you didn't even see at the federal level. So you do see states taking a lead. And truthfully speaking, there are certain areas that are appropriate for the states to act on. I coming from a state, I do definitely believe that. But at the same time, there are certain things, in my opinion, like privacy, that should be primarily done at a federal level. The key is, to your point, since tech is just constantly evolving, if you write a law today, how do you know it's going to be updated in a week from now, let alone 2 or 3 years from now? Because you know, we could brainstorm what new tech's going to look like, but we don't know until it just emerges in a few years. So I know that's even come up in the privacy bill that we are talking about. And one of the solutions to that is to have like a federal agency have a role. So like in our case, that would be the FTC or the Federal Trade Commission. So Congress could give specific direction and give them parameters, but then they would be empowered to rulemake around that. And that could help keep legislation current. There's a little more nuance to that. Like certain people are not happy with a federal agency having more of an active role, and they'd rather Congress do that. But others think that the agencies are the experts and that they are in the best position to continually update laws. And I know I'm just mentioning that in the privacy context, but I think it's applicable across a lot of tech. Is you don't want to pass a law today and have it outdated tomorrow. So I definitely think there's a role for agencies, as long as they have some sort of guidance. I wouldn't just give a general concept from Congress and then expect them to lead with it, because ultimately Congress, they're the lawmakers. Agencies are the experts, and they should be giving some more specifics. But that's also just my personal perspective.
Of course, I think there's no right or wrong answer because technology always leads and laws will lag. That's what we say. But the fact is, you need to give some guidance, as the word you use, guidance, so that technology, as it evolves, as it innovates, there are some criteria which are fulfilled. And I think a framework approach would be much more better. And you don't have to have a framework for AI, framework for robotics, framework for this and that. I think a general framework accountability, like we have the gap for accounting, we need to have for corporates, again, similar, which takes care of privacy and new tech and data and everything. But I think we are a little bit away. Of course, US does have published the AI framework or AI guidance.
Yes. And I think something to keep in mind when we're developing these frameworks, it's easy to sit in DC or sit in a state legislature and think of these concepts. And we may walk away saying these are great, but the feedback with those that are actually impacted is critical. And I know that's done, not to diminish what the federal government's done with outreach, but to make sure we're hearing from advocacy groups, consumer groups, that's critical. Instead of passing something that may have a detrimental effect on industry, like the time before we should be having those conversations before something's released or finalized to make sure there's no unintended consequences. And just one example of that on the tech front, you may be following, this is slightly outside of privacy, but you may be following the antitrust debate and legislation in the US. And, on our team, we haven't taken a stance on the actual politics of antitrust legislation. Our tech team have, which is separate than the cyber team and the privacy team. But we've looked at it from the cyber and privacy aspects. And in our opinion, there are definitely major cybersecurity concerns. And that's just one example of, like, rather than introducing tech and moving forward, we need to make sure that it actually technically makes sense and is technically protective of privacy. So that's one example of how I'd probably engage stakeholders.
I would agree. And I think there will always be criticism because that's the easy thing to do. It's more challenging to put a law. And it's always easy to say, this is not there, that is not there. But you need to look at more as a guidance, more as a framework, which allows you to do things and prohibits you from doing certain things. And then you need to apply your own judgment. Unfortunately, sometimes or most times people are expecting clear binary answers, yes or no. Well, that's not the purpose of the law. The purpose of the law is to give you a decision framework in which you choose the context. And when you apply the context, a decision is right. Sometimes it will be right and sometimes it will be debatable.
Yes, no, I think it's a great point. I am curious too, not to go back to our earlier point, but do those in the EU, are they, do you follow the current legislative developments in the US? Like, is there any attention paid to ADPPA now in terms of how there could be a federal law? Or is that more of like, that's just the US doing another law that may not become a law?
No, I think there's a lot of attention, especially after SCRMs 2, when the privacy shield got invalidated. There's a lot of interest and curiosity around how will the US legislation evolve and or how will a privacy shield equivalent be constructed? Because we cannot let the current situation prevail. Because right now we have the standard contractual clauses, we have the guidance, and then it said, do your transfer risk assessment and manage risk. Now, if any company, say a medium-sized company here in Europe, does a transfer risk assessment, it has to rely on big tech companies. You know who I'm talking about, because you use email from one of them. You use the cloud storage from one of them. And you also keep your database in one of them. So essentially, there is data transfer to US. And you cannot live without it, whatever the risk, because you have those challenges. And by saying do a transfer risk assessment, mitigate the risk, you're putting it on the business and the organization while it's a political problem. So there is, if in fact, a lot of debate, a lot of discussion, and a lot of curiosity and people are watching around what will happen, how will the landscape evolve, and what will be the privacy shield equivalent. And I can promise you, whatever will be done, it will also be challenged again, because that will remain. And that also kind of leads us to the other question. Like, we always talk about the homeland security, which is a topic in the US, because when we say the laws and everything, the question is security is important, and nobody is denying security is not important. But where does this sit in? Is that, especially with the new structure that's being proposed, Would it change? Would it shift? Would it create, make it easier? Because these concerns are around government having the capability, the ability, or the means to access data. Of course, we have this famous Apple story when they denied that access, but that's one off. And nobody has the power like to say deny.
Yes, it's, I'm glad you mentioned the Schrems decision, as well as just the transatlantic flow of data. We just did a briefing for our House. They have a House Cyber Caucus, which is just a lot of members of Congress that have a deep interest in cyber. So we did that briefing with three national experts to just bring attention to the issue, because we know there's been a tentative agreement between the EU as well as the United States. The exact particulars of that have been tightly held, so we're not necessarily sure what that could look like. We've seen, you know, certain measures floated out there in terms of how the issue of redress could be solved. But then to your point, the big issue was the ability of U.S. intelligence services to have access to that information. So hopefully we'll see some more specifics on that, because I know that there is a major impact on businesses on both sides of the Atlantic. But to your specific question on the privacy legislation, that's something that's really important to our street, my think tank, where I'm fortunate to be. We've always focused on the security and national security aspects of privacy. Like I know you've known, and some of your past episodes have flagged, there is a difference. I understand that. But this law is groundbreaking in the sense that it required data protection measures. I know GDPR has them, but in the U.S., we don't have a uniform standard for that. So if you don't live in one of those five states, you may voluntarily follow GDPR, or you may be a tech company that voluntarily implements these measures, but there's no obligation for you to do so if you're not in one of those regulated industries. So simple things in terms of having administrative, technical, and physical safeguards, that is a big concept of something we see in this bill. It also requires notification if your data is shared to select countries. So if you're an American, your data is going to be transferred to China or North Korea, that is something that has to be in the privacy policy. And that's something we don't have now. And really, at a big picture, I think the U.S. is at a disadvantage. We see the EU and many countries around the world having privacy frameworks, and we don't have one. So it makes it harder to do business here. And I think it truthfully, there's national security impacts overall.
Mm-hmm. But that's interesting. So we will have something like the EU adequacy list equivalent, which allows, or which says certain countries, if you're maybe the other way around, EU says this is safe, you'll say this is unsafe, which is more easier because you are making it difficult for some countries, but for the rest, you're saying it's equal playing ground.
Yeah, so I think the privacy notice as it stands now only impacts four countries. And I think the reason they've done that, they've included that language, is they're more of our high profile threats as the United States deems them. So at least an individual would know if their data is going there rather than unknowingly being shared with one of those.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of specifics in the bill of what these safeguards could look like. I know we talked about rulemaking before. This is one of those situations where the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, would be responsible for making rules in terms of what do these safeguards look like. And they would have to consider the size of the company as well as just the sensitivity of their data. You know, realizing that just blanket rules, they're not going to work.
It makes sense to account for, like if you see the UK, they're also a little bit reviewing the way they've come up with their legislation or a regime from GDPR driven. And now they are saying we want to be a little bit more liberal. And again, we don't know which direction they go, but it's a good idea if it goes in that direction. So if we look at a little bit forward, few years, let's say 5 years, we seem to be having a good probability that we will have a national law. We seem to be having a good probability that there will be some sort of adequacy or privacy shield arrangement. Is there anything else that will happen in this landscape in coming years?
Yeah, I think you named the two biggest ones. I've been asked before, like to try to nail me down to an exact date of when privacy legislation will pass. And I think there's been so many that have been wrong in the past that I've always been hesitant to do it. But I hope within 5 years we have a national privacy law. In terms of other I think there'll be more tech landscape done. I know in DC, like the big push is to the antitrust legislation. A lot of people have either paying attention to privacy or antitrust or both. I'm skeptical of the future of antitrust legislation, at least for this Congress, but perhaps a future one would bring it up. So that I think you may see something done around that. And there's a variety of other areas that are being worked on. There's more work being around artificial intelligence. We saw just recently more work around semiconductors and in terms of access to just key products that we need for our technology. Another big avenue too, and this is a little more broad in the cyber perspective, is just work on two fronts. Greater involvement with the federal government, with our state and local governments, as well as the private industry, especially our critical infrastructure. There's been a lot of bills recently that have targeted those two groups. And I think that's going to continue because the federal government can be experts at cyber, but if that's not going down to a local level or a small to mid-sized business level, we have a major gap in the United States. So I'm optimistic that this administration, as well as future ones, will continue that trend.
That's interesting. And I think cyber is another area which will need extra attention going forward. And no one knows how do we give that extra attention, because that's a huge risk if you don't give it attention.
Exactly. I completely agree, because if it's a little closer to you, but we see there's so many threats, increasing, especially, we saw new ones emerge around the Ukraine. And even in the homeland here, like we in the United States, we see more threats that are impacting the private sector. And traditionally, those organizations that are smaller and they have weaker cybersecurity preparedness, it makes sense. Like you would go after those that are slightly weaker, which is why it's important, I think, from a government point of view, to make sure everybody's protected, not just your largest companies or not just your federal government.
Yep. I would fully agree with that. That allows us to move into more of some choice-based options. So if I was to ask you, you have a personal choice to choose the EU regime or the US regime, let's say the future US regime. Which one would you opt for as an individual?
Yeah, I guess the challenge, I think the US has a lot of ways it can improve its legislation overall and that it's processed. There's some inefficiencies, but I am pretty happy with how the US is set up here, especially the differences between state and federal government. In terms of endorsing either a GDPR or an ADPPA distinction, there's definitely improvements, but I like the direction that ADPPA is going in, even over the GDPR. I'm hesitant to give you a full answer because the text is going to change a lot.
Of course.
I mean, there has been commitments to do that, but we're still a long way from passage. And especially if it goes to a new Congress, there'll be differences. But just in principle, I like the movement we've done with ADPPA. And I think it strikes more of a balance between consumers and industry. And I think that's been an important piece for me.
Indeed, I think that's an important piece. And in the UK, when they're reviewing the Data Protection Act or the UK GDPR, that's what they are also focusing on. But these things come with time, and any new law that comes up, that's always better than the previous one, because you have learned the lessons from the last one, and especially exactly. 4 or 5 years ago.
Yes, that's true. And you'd have a better perspective, but it even took, there was a learning curve when GDPR came out in terms of companies having to figure out how to comply and make it part of their like their actual core business strategy rather than privacy being an afterthought.
Yeah, and I think they're still learning because most companies still look at it as a compliance game. While it is not a compliance game, it's about differentiation. It's about trust. It's about how you earn trust and how you position yourself. And then compliance is a means to earn that trust.
I agree. I can completely agree. And we, even in the US, like a lot of our big tech has been getting critiqued recently and being called out in the news. And there's been legislation just to target them. To their credit, not every company, but a lot of them have voluntarily implemented privacy frameworks and measures. And I think that that's important because it's not necessarily done just for a compliance measure. Like if ADPPA becomes law, people are going to follow it, but it's out of sake of compliance. Rather, companies could proactively say now, how could I better protect the privacy of my customers and the consumers and try to get ahead of it? These are measures that are largely speaking good for their company as well as their customers.
Indeed. And I think as more and more laws will come up, what will happen is companies will start to see if we just comply with the law, we are not going to be able to differentiate. So we need to do something extra, something on top. And that's why they would not focus on, hey, I'm compliant with GDPR, I'm compliant with ADPR or PDPB or PIPEDPA and all those. They will say, hey, we protect your privacy. You can trust us with your data. This is what we do. And behind the scenes, all these will become mechanisms.
Yes, I agree. And I think what's interesting is how much more, how mainstream privacy has become. Like, you know, in the EU as well as the US, it's something more Americans and more European citizens are thinking about now in terms of who has my data, who's it being shared with, and how is it used? Maybe years ago, people didn't give that much thought, but I am glad to see there's more attention paid to that now, because even without a law, these are questions that individuals should be asking.
Indeed, and I think it's a function of many things, function of the new privacy laws, function of the era we are in, so much dependence on data, and the digitization which increased because of COVID or Corona, and all that combined means it's all about data, it's all about digital. And if it is, where is my data? Because now we are saying even passports can be digital, identification can be digital. If that happens, and it will happen in time, then we are creating more and more challenges, and more people will ask, where is my data? Who has access to my passport? Because now it's not in your pocket anymore.
Exactly. And I love tech and I use a ton of it. But you're right. There is that trade-off between having a physical copy of it and knowing I am the only one that has that. Short of somebody breaking into my house or my office, they're not going to have that. But you're right. So much of my information is digital now. Even somebody that works in privacy on a daily basis, it can be easy to sometimes just click, okay, I consent, or okay. But you're right, we should be taking a step back and thinking, who has my data and how's it being used?
Yeah. Okay, so that's been a wonderful conversation. And if based on that, somebody wants to say, what exactly do you do and how can they contact you? What would be the right approach, or what would they need to know?
I would recommend people can go to our website, which is rstreet, STREET.org. And that's really, it shows all of our scholars' work across all of our different teams. But the cybersecurity team has a specific page there. And we're probably publishing something once or twice a week on privacy, including the legislative developments. So if people want to follow there, they can. Or they can email me. I also have a bio page there. I'm always happy to talk about privacy and cyber. And I'm also on Twitter and LinkedIn. On both of them, way too much. So if you want to see what's happening in the U.S. or some broader thoughts, feel free to look for me on Twitter. It's Brandon_J_Pew, or on LinkedIn at Brandon J. Pew. And I mean it. I'm happy to engage with people, especially if they're from outside the U.S., because I enjoy seeing your perspective and learning from you, and sharing some U.S.-specific information.
Absolutely. And it was a privilege to have you. So thank you so much for your time, Brandon.
No, thanks for having me, and thanks for doing this, the podcast. It's really great.
Thank you.
Fit for Privacy helps you to create a culture of privacy and manage risks by creating, defining, and implementing a privacy strategy that includes delivering scenario-based training for your staff. We also help those who are looking to get certified in CIPPE, CIPM, and CIPT through on-demand courses that help you prepare and practice for certification exam. Want to know more? Visit www.fitforprivacy.com. That's www.fit4privacy.com. Thanks for listening. If you liked the show, feel free to share it with a friend and write a review. If you have already done so, thank you so much. And if you did not like the show, don't bother and forget about it. Take care and stay safe. Until next time, goodbye. If you have questions or suggestions, feel free to drop an email at hello@fit4privacy.com. That's hello@fit4privacy.com.